This is part two of three talks on Demeter and Persephone. This one won't be highly inspiring because I'm going to be taking very down-to-earth things this time. So quite a bit of it historical. And because my body is ill. It's kind of hard to be inspirational when you're ill. So, all right. Next time we will talk about the really deep stuff. We'll talk about a Platonistic interpretation and then go beyond that, hopefully. We'll retell the story since it's been so long and since Pam has been copping out for a long time. Demeter, whose name means barley mother, in Roman she's known as Ceres, from the word ceremony and cereal. She's the daughter of Cronos and Rhea. And she is the sister to Hestia, Hera, Hades, Poseidon, and Zeus. She is a goddess that has much to do with both heaven and earth, and can be seen having a really strong identification with both. And she has dual natures in both. For the most part, she's a really kindly, gentle kind of soul. And is a divine benefactress. On the other hand, she's also quite lusty. She copulates with her brother Zeus and has two children, Cor and Aeacus. Cor, I believe, means innocence or something like that. And Aeacus means boisterous shout. She also has other bed partners, some because she wants and some because she doesn't. She has a big affair with Iasus in a rain-soaked cornfield, a thrice-plowed rain-soaked cornfield, and comes back to the wedding all full of all full of mud, and Zeus gets jealous and he kills Aeacus with a lightning bolt. And the result of this union is Plutus, which is not Pluto, but wealth. Plutus means wealth. And during her period of sorrow, she has, how would you say it, a transmorphic sexual relationship with her brother Hades, because she tried to hide from him by becoming a mare, and he became a stallion, and they had two children as a result, two foals, I guess you call them, one foal and one colt. That's the way it would be. But at any rate, she has a lot to do with bellies. She was in Cronus's belly, and she's caused somebody to eat and never get full and such like that. She has a lot of things to do with the belly. We talked about that last time. Though she's very mild, she's had a lot of sorrow. In the heart of the mystery myth, remember this is the second of the three mystery myths we're going to look at. Next time we're going to look at part one of the last mystery myth, which will be Dionysus, Zagreus, Bacchus, Liber Bacchus, all as one being. And then the following time we're going to see the priest of that being Orpheus, which is probably the most, for me, important myth that we're going to cover. And in this case, when we looked at Isis and Osiris, it was a wife grieving for her lost husband. And in this case, we have the much more severe case, a mother grieving for her daughter. Her daughter, Cor, which means pure maiden, later is called Persephone. But in the interlude between being called Cor and Persephone, she is out one day with her maiden friends on the fields of Elysus, and she's picking flowers, some say poppies, some say daffodils, and Hades falls in love with her, or better said, he falls in lust with her, and he goes to Zeus and says, I love your daughter, can I marry her? And Zeus gave a George Bush kind of answer, knowing that either way he would be in trouble, either with Demeter or with Hades. And he said, I can neither deny nor grant your wish. And Zeus, Hades takes that as a go sign, and he comes out with his black horses and black chariot, and Ope comes out of a cleft in the earth and grabs Cor and takes her down into Tartarus. And the only person who has any evidence at all is Hecate, who hears the words, a rape, a rape. Demeter is adamant, as only a grieving mother can be adamant. She goes through 9 days of tremendous grief and has all sorts of episodes in those 9 days. She refuses to return to heaven and refuses to let the world come to life. It's becoming desolate. Every living thing is dying. She wanders everywhere looking for her daughter. She eventually comes. She has this nasty affair with Poseidon as a horse. And she eventually comes to the court of King Celeus in Mantinea. And still being with milk from having given birth to foal and colt, she is hired as a wet nurse to the new prince Demophoon. And while there, the lame daughter of King Celeus tries to cheer her up by singing her dirty ditties. And then there's an old nurse who tries to go one better and first plays a joke on her and gives her a drink of water with barley and mint in it. And finally she starts groaning, the old hag, and she lifts up her skirt, and there she has her pubes shaved, and distracts Demeter, and she laughs, and out from under her skirt jumps Aeacus, her son, who grabs her in her arms and kisses her. And while she's drinking, one of the king's sons, Abas, says, my, how greedily you drink, and she gives him one stare, and he turns into a lizard and runs off. And she feels ashamed of having done that to her host's son, so she decides to take Demophoon and immortalize him by putting him into fire, holding him into fire. But while she's doing that, Demophoon's sister Metanea comes in, and I think she's making noise of some kind and breaks the spell, and Demophoon dies. And King Celeus is now grieving as much as Demeter is. Demeter says, I will give you more recompense than you can imagine. You still have 3 sons remaining. And about this time, the 3 sons, one is Triptolemus, the cattle herd, one is Eumolpus, the shepherd, and the Eubuleus is the swine herd. And they're all out with their animals when the ground opens up and a black helmeted man whose face they cannot see comes charging out of the ground and grabs a young woman and goes back into the ground, and the pigs fall into the crevice in the earth. The princes wept for the young girl, and Demeter now has evidence. She has a witness, and she takes Hecate. And they go to see Helios, the divinity of the sun, who sees all and knows all, because he's up there all the time, and he verifies this and says, yes, what you're saying is true. So she pleads her case to Zeus and says, everything's going to die on earth unless I get my daughter back. And so first Zeus tries bravery, and he sends Iris down, and Iris has all sorts of gifts, and Demeter says, no go, I want my daughter and that only. finally, he sends Mercury down to Hades because Hermes is the only one of the Greek gods who can go into the underworld and be friendly with Hades. Mercury and Pluto have a special relationship with each other astrologically also, but that's neither here nor there. And he says, if you don't let Kor go, we will all be undone. He sends Hermes also to Demeter saying, your daughter is yours provided she doesn't eat any of the food of Tartarus. And Kor had been so distraught while in Tartarus that she didn't even eat one slice of bread. And she's leaving and being carried off in a chariot when Smarty Pants Escalopus, who is a gardener in the garden of Tartarus, said, I saw her pick a pomegranate and split it open and eat seven seeds, and I'm ready to bear witness. Demeter is both joyful and grief-stricken because she's getting her daughter back, but she knows that she's also going to lose her. And so there is a struggle of wills again between Hades and Demeter. And finally, things are taken to grandmother Rhea. Zeus can't handle it himself. And what happens is Rhea comes up with a compromise that 3 months she will be the bride of Hades and the queen of Tartarus and be known as Persephone, which means bringer of doom or something like that. And 9 months she will live above the earth, and she will be known as Kor. And Hecate volunteers to watch over the pact and see that it's done. Before leaving Eleusis, she gives all kinds of gifts and curses. Escalopus, she puts in a hole, in a, something like a manhole with a stone over the top of it. Later on, Heracles frees him from this, but Demeter immediately turns him into a short-eared owl, which was one of the ugliest things that the Greeks could think of. Cephisus, who was somebody who consoled her and aided her while she was on her search for her daughter, Demeter gives him the fig tree and its cultivation, which has to do with fruitfulness. The fig is both fruit and flower at the same time, botanically speaking. And the whole house of Celia, well, she gives to Phanetius, she gives the art of cultivating grains and gives him all of the grains that will be cultivated, but warns him never to cultivate beans. All the mystery schools had something against beans. We won't even go into it because there are about 5 or 6 different interpretations, and they're all interesting from the ancient to the modern. And she promises to the house of Celius that forever they will celebrate and be instructed into the mysteries of her worship. Triptolemus especially is given a cart that is drawn by serpents, and he is taught the art of agriculture, and he becomes king of the mysteries. And according to the Platonists, the art of agriculture was the sowing of souls into the earth, meaning to say how the soul gets embodied into the earth. All right, now we're going to look at some very almost secular things just to get the feel of things. And then the next time that we meet, we're going to see some of the deeper spiritual sides of it. Last time, we looked at the myth and we had all sorts of little sidelights about all of those details. And when we told the story, we did about the same thing that we did with the story of Isis and Osiris and saw those as key figures in the mystery myths. But what we did with the Isis and Osiris is we interpreted the myths from several vantage points on one horizontal plane. We interpret them physiologically, we interpreted them astronomically by star lore. This time what we're going to try to do is we are going to look at the myth not horizontally with various different spiritual interpretations, but we are going to do it vertically. We are going to look at the myth at four different levels of depth. But before we do that, we want to look at the celebrations of the mysteries. There were two celebrations of the mysteries. There were the lesser mysteries and the greater mysteries. Almost nothing, if you're not clairvoyant, almost nothing is known about those mysteries, because it was punishable by death to tell about the mysteries. Even the skeptics and even very gross people all admitted that whoever passed through the mysteries was transformed into being a better human being. And no one passed through the mysteries without having some sort of vision of the spiritual worlds. But for some people, it was quite common. So we're talking about something, a process, a dramatic process that is awakening to spiritual consciousness. We've talked for a number of times now about the nature of the mysteries. Now, when we talk about the lesser mysteries and the greater mysteries, it's peculiar because the greater mysteries actually existed before the lesser mysteries did. And when you hear about the greater mysteries are not what we call in a modern sense the greater mysteries, but we'll talk some more about that next time. These are the Greek lesser and greater. The reason the lesser mysteries were started was for Heracles. Heracles was on his 12th labor, and his 12th labor was to go down into the underworld, into Tartarus, and get the watchdog, which was called the Kerberos. I think it was a 2- or 3-headed dog, and he was to bring it up to the earth and kill it, which was right up the alley of Demeter, after Hades had taken her daughter and abducted her and taken her away. And he, on the way to find the adit, or the opening into the earth, the cleft into the earth, he passed through Eleusis. And he asked to be initiated into the mysteries. And technically, this was disallowed for two reasons. Number one, he was not an Athenian. And they were, the prejudice that the Greeks had was not a prejudice by color, it was a prejudice by language. And if somebody didn't speak exactly the same language as they did, they were considered barbarians, even though they were Greeks. And so the Greeks said only, belonged to a race religion. Each of the different tongues of Greece, the different tribes of Greece, had their own mysteries. They were all their own hierarchies of gods, and they were all parallel to each other. But people were born into certain races to hear certain language and to wear certain clothes and have a certain type of diet, because that's what they needed for their specific kind of experience. And the prejudice was there to make sure that there was not at that time too much intermingling of races, because those races needed to be kept as pure vehicles for getting specific kinds of experience. All of that is now outdated. It's very much changed. So he wasn't an Athenian, meaning he wasn't an Ionian, and he could not then be initiated. And the second reason he couldn't be initiated is that only people of very high character could be initiated into the mysteries, and he had the blood of the centaurs on his hands, and so he couldn't do that. And Demeter fixed something up for him. She said, all right, we'll find a way that you can get into it. And the first thing that was done was Palaeus, who was a curious man in himself, it means of the gate, meaning the gatekeeper,
Pylaeus adopted him as his son, and then he became an Athenian. Pylaeus is very interesting because he's the precursor of Parsifal, because he had the same sort of experience of seeing somebody with a wound of many years, and when seeing the person with the wound, he feels the pain, and later he gets the healing ability to heal the wound. The second thing is that in order to purify his character, the lesser mysteries were formed. And that's the history of them. They were celebrated in a different time and a different place. The lesser mysteries were called Mikka. And they were celebrated in February, at about our time of Lent.
Richard,
yes.
The lesser mysteries were what Heracles had so he could qualify for the greater mysteries.
Right. Yes. And so he could qualify to view the greater mysteries. That it's a very peculiar thing. The greater mysteries, everybody became a seer to some degree, even if it was only momentary. And one viewed the mysteries, which is a very unusual word that they use. It has to do with seeing. In fact, the lesser mysteries have to do with seeing also. They were celebrated in February, and they were celebrated across town from Eleusis in another little town called Agras. Agri, A-G-R-A-E. And they were celebrated next to the river. And if we remember the river from Isis and Osiris, that's the river Oceanus, that when you go upstream, you become a god, and when you go downstream, you become a human. It's the caduceus of Mercury stream, involutionary and evolutionary. The lesser mysteries were completely choric, meaning to say that they dwelt on the principle of purity and lost innocence. And the purpose was a cleansing remembrance. They were called the celebration of the miseries of the soul. And they were called Talete. In that they lopped things off. And what they lopped off was your sins, or even your some of your tendencies to sins, but the sins for certain. And once cleansed, you couldn't go back to your old way, because telete, as much as lopping off, this goes back to, remember the mysteries of Isis and Osiris, where they cut all the limbs off of the tree? That is called the process of telete, which is a cleaving off, but it is also a process of clothing over. Because when a person passed, the people who passed through the lesser mysteries were called miste, meaning veiled. Yes. They were a celebration of the miseries of the soul. They were the purgation of the pain and of the faults or of the failures that produced the pain. And this is where our word mysticism comes from, where our word mystery. It actually means to be veiled. And as a consequence, everyone coming out of the Mikka were called veiled ones. And they were in the same position as Isis. Remember, Isis was completely veiled. And you went through the mysteries of Isis before you got to the mysteries of Osiris. And the veiling has to do with not only being cleansed, but recognizing you're being cut off from the spiritual world. And they were mysteries of vision. And there are no, or there are very few auditory illusions, but there are many optical illusions. And the whole optical world was considered illusory. And the veiling is the veiling of the universal spirit, the world soul, by matter. And the painful, sorrowful, grievous recognition of our being veiled was the lesson of the Mikkah. So that when you went through the lesser mysteries, you couldn't go back to your own way of life, and you were then a mista. And after 1 year, after having gone through the lesser mysteries, you were then allowed, if you had passed your probation and had lived a life that was consonant with your original cleansing, that then you were allowed to enter into the greater mysteries. The lesser mysteries had to do with sight, and the greater mysteries had to do with sound, with the reception of the word, the greater joys of the soul. In the Christian sense, they relate to St. Luke's Gospel and St. John's Gospel, because right away in the very beginning of St. Luke's Gospel, it's very clear that the writer says, "We who have seen these things." Whereas right in the very beginning of St. John's Gospel, it talks about "we who are hearers of the word." Those are not poetic statements. Those are actually mystery keys, that seeing is much more associated with feeling. Sound is much more associated with thinking. And if you look in Luke's Gospel, everything, you know, like the spikenard of ointment and all of those things are tremendously feelingful. Whereas if you read St. John's Gospel, the lofty philosophy and the deeper ideas, it's the most profound of all the Gospels. The people who received the word were not called mystē, they were called epaptē, which has many, many meaning. They were epotēri, seers. There is also a seership that comes from this, but it's seership in the higher sense. The greater mysteries were celebrated on the plain of Eleusis. This is where Cor was abducted by Hades, and this is where she was released into the upper world. They were celebrated not in February, but they were celebrated in September, probably very near to the equinox at a right phase of the moon. Some say it was a celebration, and some say it was an enthusiastic orgy, which is probably the proper term. You're going to hear a lot of Platonistic terms, especially next week. It'll be the Platonists, of all of the people that I've ever heard interpret myths, the Platonists, people like Proclus and Clement of Alexandria and Osanus Lucullus and Sallust and people like that, they were great mythological interpreters, the best I've ever run into. I can read some of the things. Sometimes you have to read a line 5 or 6 times to understand what they're actually saying, and then to understand what it means. It's really profound. The next week we'll try as much as we can with our limited consciousness to enter into that. An entheastic orgy means that they were captivated by a god. Not in mediumship. They had a science called theurgy, which is okay in the mysteries, but in order to be involved in theurgy, according to the Platonists, and it's even hinted at in the modern, like Rosicrucian mysteries, in order to learn things that go beyond the divine spirit, that go into the deeper cosmic planes, you have to leave several of your bodies. You have to be like out of your mind in the highest sense of the word. And then you catch an updraft in the consciousness of a divinity. And that is called theurgy. And in that experience, you recognize things from the deeper cosmic planes. And that was called an entheastic orgy. Of course, not everybody that was celebrating the mysteries at Eleusis was having this kind of experience, because some of them were very down-to-earth people. But this is the beautiful thing, that people would go through the mysteries, and Plato, who was a very noble and pure man and who studied the higher discipline of philosophy, could be standing right next to Alcibiades, who was gay and liked to drink. And they both could be having a spiritual experience about the same thing, but at different levels at the same time. It's sort of like, everything that has to do with the mysteries is multi-level. This is why some people, like the simple-minded Jesus people, can read the Bible and they can be benefited by it in almost like it's a children's book. But yet you can read it on another level as deep as you can go. It's with you, and you can go back to it, and you can successively go through it. And the celebration of the mysteries was just like that. You were going through it. So everybody benefited from it. Everybody had an uplifting experiences in it, but not everybody was allowed to go into the Adytum, which was the Holy of Holies, or the Sanctum Sanctorum. I like Adytum better. The Romans are all right, but I just filled in a sweepstakes. British Airways is having a sweepstakes that 1,600 lucky people all over the world can send in as many entries as they want, but they're very careful that you daren't cross one dot or put one dot in the wrong place. And then they have this independent company is doing a drawing, and you can choose one of, you put down first, second, and third choices of where you would like to go if you win. But you have to be able to go on the 23rd of April. And the April Fool is the drawing. And I, of course, said my first choice was Bombay, because that was one of the British Airways gateways. And for my second choice, I took Athens, and so maybe I could go see it now. It's all temples now. It's not celebrated on the plane anymore. Third place, I took Bangkok. Just I'll probably not get it, but it would be interesting. So there were a number of people who conducted the ceremony. Ceremony meaning celebration of Ceres, the Roman version of Demeter. Because the Romans actually got into the mysteries, the Eleusinian mysteries later on. We'll give their names by order of importance. The highest person in celebrating the mysteries was called the Hierophant. And the Hierophant was called the Interpreter. And in which word? The Praetor is important, because Praetor is the same thing as Petra or Peter. The keys of the kingdom are in the hands of Peter, and the Petra, the interpreter, means he who reads the stone tablets. All of the laws, spiritual and material, in every culture, the Jews weren't the first, all of the laws, spiritual and material, were written into stone, but they were written in a rather cryptic way, and the only person who could read and run was called the interpreter. And so this is actually what it means when Paul says in the Bible, if you're speaking in tongues when you have a real experience of the Holy Spirit, it doesn't mean anything unless you have an interpreter. And the modern, Pentecostals think this means that that's another person that tells you what it means that's also having that experience. It can be so, but the interpreter means that there is somebody in charge of the whole thing and understands the meaning behind the words. The interpreter, no one knows the names of the Hierophants. We hear about Aristotle and Plato and all of those great and noble people. We hear people like the man that we were quoting so much, Plutarch, as being associated with the mysteries. But the Hierophants were unknown people. He was called the agriculturist. He was the husband of souls, and he was the great sower and reaper. And like the ancient priests of India, he carried a curved wand, which was like the blade that is a plow. And it was thrice daring Triptolemus, who was the first interpreter, but in the times of Plato and such, the Hierophant was a full-time priest. He was celibate, and he was a very high, holy, ascetic nature. A profound, profound man. And you don't hear about these people in history. They're usually more behind the scenes. They've had their days of their days of glory. Next to the Hierophant was the torchbearer. When the words are interpreted and brought to light, that was the torchbearer, the bringer of light. Then the words were reinterpreted at another level as the crier. We're going to talk about him just a little bit. And then there was a minister at the altar. All of the Freemasons would be very interested in all of this. And then somewhere down in there, just to satisfy the material world, there was a basilisk. I think that's how it's spelled. No. There's Basilius. Obviously, you see that I'm not much interested in words. And the Basilius was the king. And later on, the Hierophant and the Basilius were opposites to each other. They each ruled part of the year. That the spiritual king ruled one part of the year, and the Tanist or the material king or the Basilius ruled another part of the year. Then there were four curators who were called caretakers of souls. And then there were 10 offerers of sacrifice. And those were the people that conducted the mysteries. And there might be hundreds of people in the celebration. Now, according to the Platonists, they were celebrated over 9 days. We're going to go into quite a bit of this next time. And they were celebrated in 9 days in 5 stages. And the first stage, or lowest stage, was the stage of arithmetic. I don't know, I'm terrible at spelling. I'll probably never learn it. Geometry. Stereometry. Stereometry is what we call solid geometry. It's from the same word as our word stereophonic sound. It comes from deep, deep, deep in the spiritual worlds, even before the beginning of our solar system. Somewhere along the line before the Titans, there were the Fates were produced, the three Gray Sisters, and there were 300 handed ones, Briares and company, and there were 3 Cyclops. And the Cyclops had one eye that they could see all around. No, I want to stop just a second. I got trouble with vandals in the neighborhood. Okay, I think we're all back again. I have people all over the world. Do you know that these tapes go to Europe and Asia? Yeah, interesting, huh? Only one going to each place. And music, and finally astronomy. All of these things to study in the Platonistic and Pythagorean mystery schools, you had to practice all of them in this order. And these five segments were purification, sacrifice. Let's see. Epoptia. Reception of light. And investment in revelation. Yes. This part is the meditation part. These are, you're all supposed to meditate on these. Like arithmetic is the actual counting of what is there and what isn't there. Geometry is putting things on a two-dimensional plane, and that has to do with the telete, the cutting things down to a two-dimensional world, and there's sacrifice in that. There's a spiritual side behind all of these, and the... No, you're supposed to meditate on them. I'm meditating on them. I don't have these. I only get so much out of this. I can't get it all. I can't see them all. And finally, the last one is friendship. Oops. And communion. Which friendship and communion is such that you are having friendship and communion with the gods, not just other humans. So that's, you wouldn't even say just other humans, because when you once experienced that, it would all be all the same. So at the stage of purification, there was a washing, and one took things off. At this point, the crier said yea or nay. Did you make it or did you not make it? So from the time that you went through the lesser mysteries, had you lived to your probation? Because the crier was far enough. The crier acts as the conscience. All of these beings are people that are inside of ourselves. That the formation of the of those who direct the mysteries is like a formation of something that takes place inside of ourselves. And the crier, as conscience, says, can look into the soul deeply enough to know whether they are, whether this soul is ready for being, receiving the mysteries, viewing the mysteries. Because if one is not ready and applies too soon, it is a very deadly, dangerous thing. I had one friend that demanded initiation at too early of a time at a much different mystery school than I know of, or than I participate in, and a person ended up with a fear that would never go away, that in the middle of July was heaped under every blanket in the house with her parents hugging her to keep her warm. She was in constant shiver for fear of the monster that was going to come through the wall at any moment. And she got her initiation, and she realized that all of us are communicating with each other on different levels at the same time. And it was more than she could bear, because in many cases there was a lot of hypocrisy going on, and she couldn't stand either the terror or the joy, and she eventually made a living will and sat in a parking lot behind St. Mary's Hospital and blew her brains out with a pistol, because she couldn't bear it. It was too hard. The only thing that would have saved her would have been a simple, down-to-earth, very human kind of love, but that just wasn't immediately available. Okay, so the stereometry had then to do with the receiving of light by being able, I'll give you a little more of that as far as I can go with it. The stereometry had to do with penetrating to the realms of light. Investment in Revelation had to do with the building and stepping into the soul vehicle. And the inner communion with God is pretty well, like if with astrology, when you're looking at the horoscope, it's the horoscope of God at the same time as it's the horoscope of an individual. And astronomy, astrology, when you are communing with the gods in that manner, that's the kind of friendship and communion that you have. And that's why that was the highest of the five disciplines in the Orphic types of mystery schools. Okay, the Eleusinian mysteries were celebrated over 9 days. The word mysteries means to initiate. And it also means to close one's mouth. That one who was initiated had a silence, and it wasn't just to protect something or to be exclusive. It was a reverential silence that you couldn't possibly ever verbalize those things. There are just some things that words, as we know words, are insufficient. And if someone else is capable of receiving that information by a direct transmission, then words are no longer necessary. They are also initiates. And the word mysteries also means to become a magician. The number 9 represents the current human condition. It means 3 times 3, and it's approaching the decad, which is the complete. 3 times 3, a threefold body, a threefold soul, and a threefold spirit. The decad is when they are all united together through one singular threefold mind. It's a very, everything is accomplished ultimately.